You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. To the journey.
Hello, folks. This is another episode of To the Journey.
To the journey!
I am Charlene, and I have my lovely co-hosts with me as always. They are...
Tristan Riddell and...
Lori Sears.
So, this week, you guys, you know, I kind of was looking forward to this episode with gritted teeth. Because we're going to be talking about, some aliens that I kind of like. I love to hate them. We're going to talk about the Kazon.
Woo!
I think a lot of people
that's a spirit.
Have the grinding their teeth whenever they talk about the Kazon. I'm not one of them, but I know a lot of people do.
Yeah, I'm in that camp. I'm glad that you're not, Tristan. Maybe you can help us balance things out a bit. Just for the record, I don't completely hate them. We're going to discuss some good points about them. It's just I felt that they went very wrong, and we're going to get into that today. So, to get us started, when I was... basically doing my research for this week's podcast, I came across an interesting thing that I had not seen before in Memory Alpha, and that was that the Kazon were originally going to be called the Gazon.
Sounds almost French.
Bon appétit.
Exactly!
I know, right? Like, everyone's thinking garçon when they see Gazon.
Gazon! Yeah, what? That makes them sound really wussy.
I think, I also read the same articles that... that you read, Char, and I believe the reason why they changed the pronunciation was because there was the Gaza Strip was in the news a lot at that time. The showrunners didn't want people to make a faulty connection.
Right. They didn't want to make an association, didn't want people to have, I suppose, bad feelings in regards one way or the other between the Gazon and the Gaza Strip. Sorry, I'm over exaggerating it on purpose.
No, it's after just, you pronounce it that way, you have to say it that way.
Yes, you do. The Gazon.
Yeah, I'll never be able to just say Gazon. See, you can't do it. It's
it's not nearly as much fun. So that said, now, what did you think about the Kazon? First impressions. What did you think, Lori?
What did I think of them? My first impression. I thought, well, whoever's digging out Georgia red clay and using it as makeup is going to be busy for a while if they keep these guys on here.
I'm so glad you had that impression, because I did too, except it was Kentucky.
They're so red. And then it does look like they have clay in their actual hair, along with whatever, like leftover highlighting foil or whatever that is. I'm not sure.
It's like a spa experiment gone wrong. Clay facial meets highlights meets nuclear bomb disaster.
All that they were missing was the cucumbers on their eyes as they walk into the transporter room.
Yes, only they're several weeks rotted or something really gross and just terrible to look at.
Nice.
That's so funny with the like with the tinfoil, because they were getting like low lights and highlights and it just went horribly wrong.
That is fried their hair.
That is a perfect analogy to what the Kazon look like.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it really does. I will forever see them as salon accidents.
But besides their looks, what did you think about the characterization, Lori?
Well, I mean, like, what do we see? The very first time we see them, they don't know how to make water. They're supposed to be technologically advanced, and water is an issue. Really? Come on. That's what I thought.
It is a little hard to believe, because you would think a spacefaring species would not quite have an issue with something as common and as needed as water. Or as you say, water. But then again, let's not forget that the Kazon are not the smartest species we've come across ever in the Star Trek universe. And a lot of what they got, as we found out in their story, they basically stole from other races.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the only time that we heard them talk about needing water was from the Nistrum.
True. Very true.
Maybe it was just them.
Like, that could be, I mean, they're a nomadic race, they're territorial, so maybe they staked a claim, and then they're like, oh, holy crap. Like, we staked a claim in a place that doesn't have any water, because a lot of species in the Delta Quadrant didn't have transporters, didn't have replicators, and mm-hmm. everything that was on their ships, they had to take with them. And if they're in a region of space that doesn't have that much water, you know, I don't know. I mean, like, that was a common complaint for a lot of people, and it's completely justifiable. But you can reason it away with whatever sci-fi excuse you can think of. I mean, like, yes, they're not very smart. They have stolen technology. Who knows if they're even using that technology to its full potential? And it's not a Kazon-wide thing. It could just be the Nistrum, and they're territorial, so maybe there's just no water in that area, and they weren't brave enough to venture out just yet. So I don't know. I mean, it does seem a little far-fetched that a spacefaring race doesn't have water, but with all those factors combined, that's kind of how I rationalize it in my own head.
That makes sense. It does.
Yeah, that you make a really good point, actually, because there were so many different factions of the Kazon, and mm-hmm. they weren't very big factions, but there were a lot of them, and they were all just kind of scrambling to get their hands on whatever they possibly could. Mm-hmm. They would steal from other races, they would steal from, you know, uninhabited planets, they would steal from each other. They did not care. They were constantly power hungry, and just took whatever they possibly could out of anybody's hands.
Mm-hmm.
So
it makes you wonder if they're all Kazon, but yet they're called Kazon Nistrum, Kazon Ogla, Kazon Sarah. And I'm wondering, like, if, like, some advanced race, like, calls us, like human Americans or human French, you know?
I have this weird feeling that Ferengi do that.
I uh-huh. hope so.
Humans.
Human yes. Brazilians. Human Australians.
I hope that, like, the Ferengis are, like, crazy advanced compared to us, but they just plateaued. And then we, like, once the Vulcans came around, we surpassed them. But yet they just were like, no, we're not going anywhere near that society.
Their women wear clothes. Oh, my God.
Yeah, oh my. Speaking of ladies, it's very obvious as you watch the Kazon in these early seasons of Voyager that there are not many ladies.
Yeah.
And that's mostly due to the way that women are treated in the Kazon culture, which is not exactly nice.
No. Seska's a good example of that.
Yes. Yeah, even she, who, obviously not a native Kazon, was pretty disrespected and belittled when she stood up to Maj Kula.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she was totally the brains of any operation he was a part of.
Totally. And then Kes, I mean, when you first saw her, she was beaten up and abused. You could tell they had really let her have it. So
she was basically going to just be a slave to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how they treated ladies, and we saw only maybe like what, one female Kazon, and that was in Caretaker, and it was not a speaking part. It was just a face in a crowd.
It was just about two or three Kazon females in Caretaker, and that was it. Caretaker, that's it, the only episode. And if you think about it, it was the same amount of Ferengis that we saw in all of Deep Space Nine, and Next Generation was only like two or three. And
are you counting Moogie?
Yeah, I'm counting Moogie.
Okay.
Like Moogie and the woman who was posing as a man.
Yeah, that girl. I can't remember.
And if you don't count when Quark had his sex change.
Yes, yes. No, actually, you're right. You are absolutely right.
And it showcases when you have a male-dominated society, a patriarchal society, how insane it can get and how they try to sweep the women under the rug and just use them for, you know, either slave labor or breeding material, or like, I mean, even on the Ferengi homeworld, they weren't even allowed to travel without a man, and like when they were allowed to participate at the Tonga championships, it was in the basement. Like, that was the only reason why. And I would assume that the Kazon females are quite similar.
Yeah, maybe even treated slightly below that. I always feel like the Kazon are like little cavemen with starships. Mm. And so, you know, it was basically just they would beat the women over with clubs and Unless they were making dinner or getting pregnant.
Oh, jeez.
Sorry, but that's the visual I have. It's not pretty.
No, and it's I did like how they focused on the subjugation of the women with the Ferengi, but I feel like it was might have been a missed opportunity with the Kazon, but maybe it just would have been repeating themselves because they dealt with it so much in Deep Space Nine.
Mm. Yeah, I could see people complaining about that.
I would have liked to have known the role that the women had in the society, just because I liked it when they weren't just menacing, but they had their culture behind them that we found out about.
Right. Mm. Well, let's talk a little bit about their culture, because the writers had a very definitive source that they drew from to create the Kazon, and that was, as many people know, the LA street gangs. Mainly the Bloods and the Crips. So you trade that for the Olgla and the Nistrum, I guess. And there you go. You've got ghetto Klingons.
ghetto Klingons, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, they're romping around Compton, raising hell.
Compton, oh my god.
The speakers are just blown out of those ships.
Yeah, they can't handle bass anymore.
Yeah, no more.
I lived in Los Angeles for a little bit, and I still know nothing about the LA street gangs. I know nothing about the Bloods and the Crips. I mean, the most that I know about the Bloods and the Crips are from what I learned from the Kazon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're essentially based off of street gangs. And one interesting thing that you brought up at the very end of the episode last week, Tristan, was that Michael Piller wanted the Kazon to be very youthful, which makes a lot of sense to me because in gangs, things are very violent and volatile, and let's just face the facts here. Most people don't live to an advanced age in that kind of environment. So that would make a lot of sense for the Kazon, but mm-hmm. they ended up repealing the idea. Now, Lori, what did you think about that?
I thought that's a good idea. It makes sense when you think about it. This species that has the ability to go into space, but that's about all the ability they have. So they steal to keep going. That makes sense. But yeah, I don't understand. Why would they get away from that? Why would they not go with that? Because those people are definitely not young.
Michael Piller, he was the one who was really pushing it for young people. And he said that his age range was around 18 to 25. But right. They said that like older actors just played the roles better. Like whenever they found a young actor, it just didn't get the performance that they needed. Now the thing is that I've met a lot of talented 18 to 25 year old actors and actresses. But the thing is, when you're that talented, that young, your cost is very high. And so on a TV budget, sometimes that can go out of whack. Now I've worked with young actors, I've worked with older ones, and the younger ones are by far the most difficult to work with. If you want to generalize, I mean, you'll always have that older actor who is a prima donna or is very difficult to work with. But on a whole, younger people are harder to work with. They have all the ego and none of the talent.
And, gotcha. And no experience.
And no experience. And when you're dealing with a film, you can usually find someone that you can work with and you're like, really have the time to focus on it and mold it. With a TV show, you have less than a week. Mm-hmm. And so you just have to, you get the person with the most experience, and sometimes those ideas, just for the sheer economics of television, get sacrificed. Like they start out really awesome, but then you're like, no, money, time, money, time, money, time, money, time. Okay, this is what we got.
Right. And it always boils down to those things.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. So I'm glad you have that perspective, Tristan, because I was thinking, why didn't they go with this? This makes too much sense not to do it.
Yeah. I know. I wish they did. It would have been so great because then people would have gotten the LA street gang metaphor a little bit more.
Yeah.
I think so. I think it would have made a lot more sense just even for why the Kazon are the way they are and why they're essentially just big bullies going around taking whatever they can out of anybody's possession, having very little remorse about that, and yet they are kind of spread thin. I mean, and they're not united, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're all out for themselves. That screams street gangs to me.
It does.
Everybody out for themselves. And yeah, that would have just been too good, I guess.
And it would add a little bit more credence to the fact that the Borg rejected them for assimilation.
Whoa.
Indeed. Let's not forget that. They were not going to contribute to the pursuit of perfection.
Not at all.
They detracted from it, if I recall what Seven said.
Yes. I'm so glad that we got to, I think that was the first and maybe the only time when we heard that, when they weren't viable for assimilation. And I love that, I think it was Seven who brought it up, and she said that their designation was 329.
Yeah.
And I love that that was a small number. And of course it's going to be a smaller number because they're Delta natives, just like the Borg. I love that little attention to detail.
Yeah. Yeah. That's neat.
That was, yeah, definitely. And yet they were very early on rejected.
There you go. Yeah,
so much for that, huh?
And the Borg took the Talaxian. So, wow, their standards.
Hey, Talaxians are a noble and proud race.
Of kitty cats.
But they are resourceful. They do have that redeeming quality. One problem I have about the Kazon is they do not have any redeemable qualities that I can think of. Can you?
No, I can't.
Yeah, that's why I think they are bad villains, because you need to at least understand where they're coming from and have a little bit of sympathy for their cause to make them good villains.
That's true.
Just not there.
That's true. That's good storytelling, too. If you can't at least see their side, one little bit of empathy, like you said, and, oh, no. You could never see their...
Yeah.
I don't know. Tristan, are you going to say that you could see their side?
I feel like you guys are mostly right. I feel like you're 99.9% right, and that 0.1% would be alliances where the trade was introduced.
Oh, yes. Okay. I'm glad you brought this up.
Yes. I feel like, okay, they were a slave race that were spread apart. We don't know if they were united beforehand or if they were factions beforehand, but they definitely were factions when they were slaves. And then they united together to defeat their foe. And then all of a sudden their old ways came back and they went back to factions. When people treat you like an animal, soon that's what you become. And I feel like, now granted, they're not under the boot of the Trabe anymore, and they should find their own way. And you can't, it's like blaming your mom for everything, even though you haven't lived with her for 50 years.
How very Freudian.
Yeah, exactly. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is they had very rough beginnings, and there's a reason why they're scavengers and they're scattered, and they don't have a unifying force, and they don't have a moral compass, is because they were subjugated for so long and they had to split to survive. They didn't stress that throughout the series, and if that's the only time that we identify where they're coming from or why they're doing what they're doing, then that's a failed job. But I am glad we at least got that little remnant.
Yeah, me too. I mean, they tried. They really tried. And for maybe a brief instant, you see, okay, I have a little sympathy for these guys. But that whole story, honestly, I was confused. I mean, one party says one thing about the other party. I don't know. Do we ever really get to the bottom of all those issues? I don't know.
Well, I felt like that made it a little bit more realistic, because when you have that many factions, I mean, look at our own politics. I mean, we just have two parties and we can't agree on anything. And one side says the other one said this, and one side said the other one said this. And so I don't know. To me, that made it realistic, but I understand your point of view where it is confusing, because you want to at least have a kernel of truth, or at least understanding once you get down to it.
Yeah.
Right. I think putting more time into this story and letting it unfold would have definitely helped with that scenario.
Yeah.
Which, so, okay, this leads to a question. Are the Trabe responsible for the way that the Kazon are? Is it their fault? Or is it like what you said, Tristan, where, okay, there's so many years removed from this and they're still a hot mess, so whose fault is it? Is it both?
Well, it has to be both. I mean, it absolutely has to be both, because if you say it's all the Trabe's fault, then you are not recognizing the Kazon as sentient individuals.
Yeah.
And if you say it's all the Kazon's fault, then you're letting the Trabes have a get out of jail free card.
Right. You're letting them off the hook for what they did. So.
Exactly. And so you got to have a happy medium where, yes, it affected who they are and it affected the problems that they've had, but they are now separate from the Trabe society. It's not like in our own history where we took a slave race and then released them, and then now they just have to deal with that racism and crap because they're, you know, they have nowhere else to go. And so the Kazon have a different situation where they threw off their shackles and literally left their solar system and are now free to create their own culture on their own. And so from there on out, they're responsible for their actions, but yet their history is still of slavery and torture.
Right. I guess it's pretty similar to the great old nature-nurture debate. Like, the Trabes set them up for this disastrous mess that they are. But once they did get free, they could have united, they could have become something more organized and better, but I think they lacked the skills. Mm-hmm. And so what eventually happened was they just retreated to what they knew, and that was just bare bones basic survival. And that means you do whatever it is you have to do to get by. So one thing about alliances is that it was a part of the season 2 arc, and they really did try to do an arc with the Kazon.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this was kind of interesting because a lot of people criticize Voyager for not having any continuity at all. And yet here we have this ongoing thing. It wasn't every single week, but it was certainly a good chunk of season 2 where we saw initiations with Nog the Kazon, as we talked about last week. And then, of course, all of the Seska baby daddy drama, and then leading to alliances with the Trabe and failed negotiations with the Kazon, and then concluding with Basics, where the Kazon take over Voyager, but end up, well, we know how it goes. We've seen it.
I thought that was a great culmination to the season and to the Kazon story arc. And I thought it was a perfect way to say so long to the Kazon. Like we loved you while you were around, but we've had enough.
Definitely enough. Because really, Voyager's trying to get home. How spread apart are these guys? I mean, you would think they wouldn't be able to have so much space.
Yeah.
Even between the lot of them. Just because they're so spread thin. And they're not exactly always getting along with one another. I felt, if anything, our big arc alien for that part of space really should have been the Vidians.
Yeah, that would have been.
Because it would have made sense for the Vidians to have a wide range of space because they're trying to get organs wherever they can.
Mm-hmm. And they're extremely technologically advanced.
They really were. They definitely were.
And the Kazon, no. Their warp drive fails. They don't know how to fix it. They just have to steal something new.
What season was Deadlock in?
Two.
It was in two? Okay.
That was a great Vidian story.
Yes. Yes, it was. I think that easily could have been a season finale as well.
That would have been great.
That was such a... Yeah, Deadlock. Mm. I loved Deadlock. But the thing is, I love Basic so much. And...
Yeah, me too.
It's... you with that storyline... I see what you're saying. You're not saying that Basic should have been the same with the Vidians. You're saying that the Vidians should have been the big bad at the end.
Yeah.
Yes, I can
absolutely see that, but I would still want to get Basics in some form because...
Yeah. Like, okay, I think it should have happened sooner. Like, maybe a season 2.5 two-parter.
I think that easily could have been a two-parter in the middle. It could have been even more of an action-packed single episode if you kind of take out the natives on the planet, which I could have done without. I mean, it didn't bother me, but I feel like...
Yeah, that would have been okay. Do you think it would have been... I don't know. I feel like Basics works as a very good two-parter, though. Would it have been a little... Like, would they have had to have cut out too much on the editing room to make it a 1 hour?
You would definitely have to sacrifice some storylines, yeah.
You would. I think it would have made more sense. I think it would have made more sense if it would have been at the beginning of the whole thing. Because there they are, they're stuck out there, they don't know anything about the Delta Quadrant, and here are these guys that just come along. I don't know, they're just trying to get their feet underneath them. They don't know what they're doing. the people on Voyager. So Kazon come along and take over the ship. I think it would have made more sense at the beginning to me.
But you know what? You couldn't do that because that would have made Janeway look really incompetent, and they were so nervous about a female captain that would have just really blown things up.
But I think it would have made more... To me, that would have made more sense at the beginning. But I see what you're saying, too.
Like the beginning of season one or the beginning of season two?
One.
Ooh.
See, no.
I don't agree with you at all on that.
Yeah, you know what? I think Basics is such a good kind of like capstone story. I think really we should have seen it maybe at the end of season one or in the middle of season two. I felt like by the end of season two, it was a little late. Like, we should have been beyond the Kazon by then, but it was a fitting goodbye.
I feel like I'm with you guys that it could have been done earlier. Like, Laura, you're right. It could have been done earlier. I don't know if I would go... as far as replacing caretaker.
Not that soon. No.
Well, that's what you said just a moment ago.
I said at the beginning, but I meant not like beginning, like maybe the fifth episode or something like
that. Okay, I see what you mean now.
Sorry for being vague.
Early season one, but not the pilot. Okay.
Yes.
Because I remember they did that really early on with Archer in Enterprise, where he got his butt kicked hard right off the bat, and you were just kind of like, I don't want to see this right now. Like, like, let's build them up before we tear them down.
Exactly. I think you need to build the captain as a hero before you get his butt whipped too hard. Except for Chris Pine in Star Trek 2009. I think that kind of worked.
He literally got his butt kicked, so
totally. Yeah, he did all the time. So before we wrap up, guys, one thing that I'd like to know is people have a lot of dislikes about the Kazon, and I'm wondering if you have anything maybe you would have done to improve them and make them a more interesting and watchable and maybe even more likable enemy species, whatever you want to call them. Tristan, do you have any ideas?
Well, I guess it's not really my idea to change, but just... the idea of making them younger, ever since I heard that, I was like, yes, that makes so much sense. I would love to have done that. I would have explored their culture earlier on and really exposed them it's either not expose them at all in season one or expose them a much, much more in season two. Like, with being a child of the 80s and being raised on 90s television and seeing what television is today, I love the idea of a season-long bad guy. And you get that, like, one show in particular that I really like is Justified, where it follows U.S. Marshal through Kentucky, and he has a season-long arc where he has to defeat this, like, this one family or this one guy that you're focused on, and then once that season finale is over, you move on to the next guy. And it I guess it's kind of rigid, but at the same time, there's storylines weaving in and out. I feel like Voyager could have easily benefited from that because they're constantly traveling through space, and they're not going to keep hitting the Romulans and the Klingons and the Cardassians like the Enterprise did, because the Enterprise is kind of going back and forth. You know, once they establish their borders, they're exploring stuff within. Voyager, straight line. Well, more or less.
Semi-straight.
Yeah.
So it would have been cool to kind of say, like, okay, we're entering this space. Okay, we're going to have to deal with these people for a little while, for like 6 months or something like that. And basically that's what I would do. I was like, I'd make them young and then focus on them for one season and one season only and then move on.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Lori, what do you think?
I agree with what you said. That really makes a lot of sense. Maybe make them a little more empathetic to begin with. Maybe give us a little more to chew on so we would understand where they're coming from. That's probably what I would have done. What about you?
Yeah. What do you add to what Tristan already said? I would have loved to have seen a more youthful Kazon. That just makes so much sense to me. The whole aspect of violence and this very dangerous lifestyle that they have. Most of them are not going to live to see 40. So it makes perfect sense for them to be young. And I really did like that they tried to do an arc with the Kazon in season two of Voyager. But, you know, I do kind of agree with you, though, Tristan, that you stick to it for a short while and then drop it. I was glad that they did drop it for season three, because any longer than that and we would all be just shaking our heads saying, no.
Yeah.
No way are these guys still out here. But even so, I think I still would have shortened it. And I would have wanted to have gotten to know their backstory much earlier on. And I would have liked to, I would have liked them to have some depth. Even if the Kazon as a species didn't have some sort of sympathetic element that I could understand and maybe feel for them a little bit. Like, I'm sorry, I just really don't have a whole lot of sympathy for gangs and gang members. So I think what you would go from there is you create a kind of like what they did with Carr. I did feel sympathy for Carr as a young man in this culture and what he was going through. If you did that with Kulla, who we saw probably the most of any of the Kazon, if you made him a more interesting guy, I think we would have enjoyed our Kazon arc a lot more than what we got. There were really high hopes for this whole thing. They really tried to plan it out and make something really good of it. I just think they chose the wrong aliens to go with.
Yeah.
And so it fell way short, and that's unfortunate, because I did appreciate that they tried.
Yeah.
But anyway, that is my thoughts, and now we want to know what your thoughts are. Go to our forums, Trek.fm, or trek.fm/forums, or give us a note. You can go to trek.fm/contact and let us know what you thought of the Kazon, and you will give you a little shout out. Also, if you want to rate us on iTunes, we would be more than happy to give you a shout out if you write us a 5-star review. We are always appreciative of that. Next week, we are going to return to our in-depth character analysis, and we are down now to our lowly 7 years and counting ensign, Mr. Harry Kim, our lovely green ensign. We will discuss the highs, the lows, and the many times he died and almost died.
And the space herpes.
And the time he got the space herpes.
Yeah.
Yes. So stay tuned for that next week, guys. And until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!